10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And they're off. Welcome to the Triple Crown Countdown, live from Belmont Park on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming down to the finish. Roar on Ice, Stay Thirsty at Brilliant Speed. It's a shocker in the Belmont. Roar on Ice is the winner. And here comes Union Rags unleashing a final furious rally to win the Belmont Stakes by a nose over Peter.
Presented by Brisnet.com, Cal Density, and West Point Thoroughbreds.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Palace Malice. An upset winner here in the Belmont Stakes.
The tide ticking away in the Triple Crown. Commissioner down inside. Belmont's between horses. California Road, Waverly Lake. Here's the wire. And it's a photo finish that goes to Tomlin.
Now here's Mike Pena, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom, our producer Sean C., positioned trackside just past the finish line where history may or may not be made on Saturday afternoon in the 147th running of the Belmont Stakes. We are literally about 50 yards from this main track. We are in the break for training, expecting that American Pharoah will make his way onto the track shortly after 8:30 Eastern Time, and that is, of course, the horse everybody will be watching on Saturday afternoon as we edge closer to the Belmont and attempting to become the first horse in 37 years to win the Triple Crown, the first since affirmed in 1978. That is the longest drought in Triple Crown history. Previously, you had to go back to that gap from Citation to Secretariat, 25 years, and I know the racing world hoping that this will be the year it finally gets done, JT.
Yeah, well, everybody's awaiting this race, not only racing fans, but just sports fans in general all over the country. It's great to be watching a hockey game and see an ad for the Belmont Stakes. It's great to be listening to the radio and hear race calls come over the airwaves. It's a very exciting time to be in our sport, and this is a horse that's captivated a lot of people.
Yeah, I mentioned that we're in the training break, but there are horses on the track, so that would tell you that we are not in the training break. We're about 15 minutes away from that.
There's also horses galloping on the turf in the infield, which is
one of the most
beautiful things to watch. It makes you long for European training, but it's great to watch the horses gallop on the grass in the infield here. Massive infields.
Only on Thursdays.
That's
the only day they're allowed to do that. They can train on the main turf course, but on Thursdays they're allowed to go into the massive infield here. Keep in mind, this is a mile and a half racetrack, a mile and a half in circumference, so there's plenty of room out there in the infield. And on Thursdays you get the opportunity to go out there and gallop around the dogs, which is kind of cool.
What a nice way to freshen a horse up, too, to give them a little different experience. Even if they're not a grass horse, there's probably a lot of horses that would enjoy going out on the turf and just pretending that they're loose for a few minutes.
It's funny that you say loose, because when we got here this morning, I thought I was the only one that was aware that there was a loose horse running around out on the grass in the infield. And when I alerted I said, hey, somebody might want to do something about that loose horse right there. But those grass gallops, I mean, like you said, Jude, what a great thing for the horses to just get that freedom to get out there and sort of loose rein it out there in the middle of the turf. And it is, it's a big, massive racetrack with a lot of room to do things like that. And it's really fun to come out here at Belmont and see those sorts of things.
Maybe Jeff's still jet lagged.
Just flying in yesterday.
What about you?
Diego.
You're the East Coast guy, and you're telling us it's a break. We're watching horses go around, so now they'll be blaming jet lag.
Hey, it's early. I'm not a morning person. You know this.
I wasn't going to throw the boss under the bus, but I'm going, I don't think the break's on. This horse is
maybe a few too many games of Keno last night at Teddy's.
Yeah, how we do? We get him in?
Oh, I owe you $6.
$6, sweet.
Wow.
And, of course, yeah. 54 was the number that came up right after you left, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Actually, I think I owe you $30 because you kept throwing 20s at me all night and telling me to keep playing more.
No, he prints those in Middleburg.
Yeah, exactly. I like to support anybody's gambling habit. No matter what you're gambling on, I'll support it.
Let's give our man Lou at Teddy's a little shout-out here because we've been going there for years. It's on the corner of Meacham and P here on Long Island, and it is the most unbelievable pizza that you'll ever eat. And Lou and his wife do everything themselves. It's outstanding. We had a great time over there again last night.
Yeah, it's always great when you have a big party and you go there, and then the locals come in. They go, what the hell happened? It's like our little mom-and-pop bar, and where are all these people from? But it was fun last night.
As good as the food is, which it is, and that pizza, I mean, it's about as good as it gets. The ambiance of the place, I mean, talk about old-school New York kind of small neighborhood.
Oh, it's a hole in the
pizza.
Wall.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you got the cash register from, like, the 1800s in that place. It's
there's dust on the Tullamore Dew bottle that's from, like, 1949.
Gotta get drinking more.
Dust great. Off. Well, I knew we were in a good spot when I walked into the restroom, and then on the paper towel dispenser, it said Big Paulie was here. Big Paulie. So, hey, if Big Paulie goes there, it's a good spot. Typical New York. Well, typical New York, hosting the Belmont Stakes, and they're going to do it up right here on Saturday. Of course, we're going to be with you tomorrow morning for another Triple Crown Countdown show right here trackside from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and then we're going to come back Saturday morning with a special Belmont morning edition of our Equine Forum show from 8 to 10. And then all of the racing coverage kicks off right here exclusively on the Horse Racing Radio Network, 2 o'clock Eastern Time Saturday afternoon. We'll bring you coverage of the stellar undercard, which includes multiple grade ones. And then we'll segue into that coverage of the 147th Belmont and American Pharoahs run at history in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. So you can see a complete schedule on our website, horseracingradio.net. American Pharoah was on the track yesterday. It was his first appearance here at Belmont Park after just getting here the day before from Churchill Downs. And, Sean, we saw him come by us. Didn't do very much at all yesterday. He basically just jogged one time around and not even a full lap around. But it was a good little way for him to stretch his legs and get accustomed to this surface here at Belmont.
Yeah, he just had an easy jog yesterday, first day here, just kind of stretch his legs, get out, see the place. I'm sure he'll probably gallop today. You know, I thought he looked fine yesterday. I mean, I'm anxious to see him gallop today. And, you know, I think this is these are the crucial days where you see how a horse has handled the two races. And, you know, this will be his third race in 5 weeks. And you see how he's doing, see how he's traveling mentally, physically, how he's handling the rigors of it. We've seen horses, Funny Side comes to mind, Smarty Jones comes to mind, that I'll have another certainly comes to mind, that were just kind of coming apart a little bit at the end. You know, this week they're mentally and physically they weren't handling it very well. So anxious to see how he does today. He was perfect yesterday. Looks like he's handled it pretty well.
I was going to say, and isn't that one of the big differences, I think, with American Pharoah compared to some of the others, is that as talented as the horse is, and we talk about his efficiency of stride, his fluid motion, he's just such a powerful horse, but his presence of mind, there's something about American Pharoah that just exudes class, calmness, confidence, and those are the things that weigh in when it comes down to trying to accomplish a feat like the Triple Crown.
Yeah, and I think from the human perspective, too, we talked yesterday about Hall of Famer Bob Baffert here for the fourth time in this position to win the Triple Crown. And, by the way, we're going to have an interview with Bob Baffert that we conducted yesterday. We're going to play it for you coming up later on the program here this morning, so stay tuned for that. You won't want to miss it. But yesterday I had the chance to catch up with trainer Billy Turner, who sent out Seattle Slough to win the Triple Crown back in 1977, still the only undefeated Triple Crown winner in history. And Billy talked about the relief he felt after winning the Triple Crown because of all the pressure that was placed upon him as he was edging closer to the Belmont and the week of the Belmont and everything that went into that. He went back to his stall, to the barn, and then into the empty stall and cried after the race. But it wasn't because of sadness or even tears of joy. It was because of relief. He felt so relieved after he finished the Triple Crown.
I can't even imagine what that pressure was to have an undefeated horse come to the Belmont. All of that on the line. I mean, it just has to be immense. People don't realize how much trainers take to heart what they do. And it's not easy to do, but it's also not hard to imagine when you're working at something 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, which is the life most trainers lead, is all about horse racing. I mean, you're even reading the condition book when you're on the John. So, you know, I mean, it's a all-consuming lifestyle, and to have that pressure of, you know, just can't lose. I mean, I can see where that would really be a tremendous weight off your shoulders at the end of the day of a Belmont victory.
Yeah, it defines your career. I mean, I think as a horse trainer, sometimes you wonder, why is this so important? It's just horses running around a circle. But it's your career. It's what you've done with your life. It's your decisions. It's your team you've put together, your owners, your grooms, your exercise riders, your decisions. You know, it's everything that you've worked your life for. So when the race, you know, when the race is going on, it comes down to, you know, culmination of your career and, you know, these moments of you know, all these trainers, I think when things go right, you know, you look back on it, and things go wrong, you certainly look back on it and all the decisions you made and question what you did. And, you know, the bottom line, especially for American Pharoah this year, is you just don't want an excuse. You don't want to look back and say, gosh, I wish I would have done this or I should have done that. And, you know, you make big decisions. I thought it was an interesting decision that Bob Baffert took American Pharoah back to Churchill from Pimlico and not, you know, didn't bring him here and train here at Belmont. And, you know, I think those decisions are huge. Decisions, and you know, when it comes down to it, that's you're either right or wrong, and you know, it does define your career.
That was interesting you bring that up, because again, if people want to go back and listen to that trainer talk show with Billy Turner yesterday, they can go to our website, horseracingradio.net. It was an amazing hour. So many people chimed in on social media to let us know how much they enjoyed it, so go back and listen to that. It's the perfect way to kick off your Triple Crown week. But the one question I did have for Billy during that show was, Bob Baffert's going to be going for the Triple Crown. He's here for the fourth time in this position. What advice would you give to Bob Baffert? And he paused for a minute, and he looked at me, and he said, nothing. He said he has done a remarkable job with this horse. And he said the only thing that kind of struck me was that he went back to Churchill after the Preakness and then comes up here. He said, but he's done it. That's how he's done it in the past. He said, so I would give no advice to Bob Baffert. He's handled this horse perfectly.
Excellent answer, and you know, oftentimes, especially in today's day and age with social media, trainers are second-guessed all the time. Why don't they do this? Why do they work this far? You know, it's tough enough dealing with your owners who are second-guessing you all the time. But now you got the entire racing public, questioning your every move. And it was interesting the other day, somebody was knocking Michael the Cock, one of the greatest international trainers of our era, about how he's training Mubtahij, a horse that's very accomplished, and Michael the Cock certainly has won pretty much every race that you'd want to win around the world, except maybe the Kentucky Derby and any races in the Triple Crown, and he's trying to do that now. And another person piped up, hey, this guy is a freak. He's a great trainer. What do you know about training? You know, and it's tough. I mean, it's tough to be a trainer in today's day and age. And of course, jocks have the same problem. I mean, you know, they get put in a switch and it's all over with. Oh, that guy can't write his way out of a paper bag. And you know, we've all been accused of picking on jocks, but you know, and we have not just accused of
just
it.
Just here on the show, you mean, right?
Yeah,
jocks we got with us here today.
We've been guilty of it, but now it's like everybody knows about it. In the old days, you know, if Clancy rides a race and he gets stopped, well, only the people at the track that day are going to know about it. Now the entire world knows he made a mistake.
Is this
right?
Another pinky swear story?
I was going to say, I was told I couldn't ride a swinging gait by the trainer. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, entries,
probably right.
Entries were taken yesterday for all the Saturday stakes, including the Belmont, and post positions were assigned. Odds were assigned as well. The morning line odds in place as we get closer to that 147th test of the champion. Mubtahij drew post position number one. He's at 10-1. Number two was Tale of Verve. He's at 15-1. Made from Lucky, one of two horses for trainer Todd Pletcher in here, drew post number three. He is 12-1. Nick Zito, two-time Belmont winner, he sends out Fromento, post number four, at 30-1. Both of Nick's wins in the Belmont came in a year when there was a Triple Crown on the line. Something to keep in mind as we edge closer to Saturday. American Pharoah, he's going to be odds on. He was post five, and he is 3-5. Frosted, some people considering him to be the main danger. He's 6-1 from post six. 5-1 from post six. Keen Ice for Dale Romans, post 7 at 20-1, and Materiality, the other Pletcher entrant, suffered his first defeat in the Kentucky Derby, skipped the Preakness. He is here in post 8 and he is now 6-1 on the morning line.
Well, it's really something that doesn't need to be worried about too much post position going a mile and a half. If the post kills you going a mile and a half, then you weren't up to the task. But I would think materiality drawn outside has a little bit of an edge there because he's the other speed to American Pharoah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if American Pharoah goes or materiality goes and who decides to rate.
There's several people set to come by here this morning, including Ed DeRosa from Briss. He'll give you his thoughts on who he thinks will win the Belmont Stakes and maybe even throw in a pick or two on the undercard for you with that outstanding stakes program they have here on Saturday afternoon. Bob Baffert took the time to sit down with me yesterday for about 15 minutes. We're going to have that entire interview for you later on in the program. And then a couple of other guests, Steve Haskin from the Blood Horse said he would swing by and a couple others. So stay tuned. We're back with more on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Wonder what it feels like to be an owner inside the paddock before your horse races, but don't know how to get started? Contact West Point Thoroughbreds to get inside the game. You can play in a big way right away by owning pieces of multiple horses, which can increase your chances of action. West Point Thoroughbreds has been professionally managing racing partnerships for 20 years. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtv.com. That's westpointtv.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
Joined by Coach Bill Parcells, who led the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in both 1986 and 1990. And yes, he won both of those. What do you remember about the day that you won your first race?
I just remember being excited. It's the same feeling you get when they kick the ball off in football and they put that horse in the gate and your name's on it. It's a little like football, but you have absolutely no control in horse racing. And in football, at least, you have a little bit of control in game management and decisions that are made. But it's just the luck of the draw, but that doesn't reduce the excitement. The excitement's the same, the adrenaline's the same, and when that horse goes in there, you know, you're definitely paying attention.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Secretariat came to the 1973 Belmont Stakes hoping to end a 25-year drought of Triple Crown winners in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He had been so dominant in winning the Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes, he would go to the post as an overwhelming favorite at odds of 1-10 in his quest to become racing's ninth Triple Crown winner. In what would turn out to be his most brilliant performance, Secretariat appeared to get stronger at every point of the mile-and-a-half journey. And as Belmont announcer Chick Anderson described, the result was a race for the ages.
Secretary leads his field by 18 lengths, and now Price of Prince is taken second, and Mike Gallant is moved back to third. They're in the stretch. Secretary has opened a 22-length lead. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner. Here comes Secretary to the wire. An unbelievable, an amazing performance. He hits the finish 25 lengths in front.
The official winning margin was a staggering 31 lengths. Big Red had passed the test of the champion with flying colors in what many believe is the singular most memorable moment in Belmont Stakes history.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom back with you on the Triple Crown Countdown Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your official home for American Pharoah's run at history Saturday afternoon. The only place you'll hear that on radio is right here with us in partnership with NBC Sports, and Westwood One. You can go to our website for a complete listing of affiliates, SiriusXM channel information, and to listen online on your tablet or on your smartphone. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this show, a podcast will be available on our website shortly after 10 o'clock Eastern Time this morning, and SiriusXM will be replaying the show from noon to 2 Eastern Time on Sirius 220 XM channel 206. And even though we're sitting here at Belmont Park on the fourth day of June, we are already thinking about what could be this summer. And one thing that is definite this summer is our brand new series here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is Saturdays at Saratoga, beginning with the opening Saturday of the historic Saratoga meet on July 25th. We'll broadcast live from the Spa every Saturday with exclusive coverage of the sport's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and yeah, the Travers. It all starts Saturday, July 25th, right here on HRRN. See a complete Saturdays at Saratoga schedule and listen online at horseracingradio.net. Clancy, coming to your neck of the woods this summer, my friend.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It's you guys will love. I mean, you've been there, obviously, but it'd be fun to have you there the whole meet, and we'll tear it up.
We get to read the Saratoga special
yeah,
every day.
Exactly, that's big.
Every day. You can every read day, that online, right?
Right.
My beautiful wife Michelle just brought me a cup of coffee here because it's a bit of a chilly morning. Temperature's only in the mid-50s here at Belmont, so she brought me a cup of coffee and made me think about your column, my friend.
Yeah, a cup of coffee every day, column in Saratoga, and people always ask me, what are you writing about today? I don't know, how would I know what I'm going to write about today? I don't know that until I sit down. Yeah, it'll be fun. It's a great meet, and look forward to having you guys up there.
Yeah. There's the Duke, Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com. He's making his way over. There are so many people on the apron now as we get ready for the break, and then American Pharoah set to come out right after the break. Mubtahij is set to blow out today as well, so he will train. American Pharoah not expected to do much. He'll probably just go ahead and jog, I would imagine. One time around, much like he did yesterday, because Jude, all the heavy lifting is done. He just needs to stay happy between now and Saturday.
Yeah, well, he may jog. He may do a little light gallop. We'll see what happens.
That DeRosa with his camera, snapping pictures out here.
It's like I'm a real professional.
I wouldn't go that far.
Happy
Belmont Week.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Got in yesterday. Great to be here.
Yeah, ready to roll?
I think so. As long as the horses are, I'll enjoy it, that's for sure.
No jacket. We're sitting here freezing, and you're walking around with just a shirt on.
Yeah, no. I'm really warm, but I walked down to check out the new platform, and this is a big place, so that's quite a hike.
Yeah, that'll warm you up, too. Walking from one end of Belmont to the other is enough. That's a good workout. Mile and a half oval. History very well could be made here on Saturday afternoon. American Pharoah, 3-5 on the morning line from post 5, Ed.
Yeah, it's a little short for me. People listen to the Colin show, which is tonight, but those who have listened to it before tonight know I was a fan going into the Derby and Preakness, but I'm hopping off the bus after the Preakness. And, I'm not one of these that thinks, oh, it hasn't happened, so I'm going to bet against it type. I believe the hype that this was a good group going into the Derby, and two of those that made it a good group are back here on 5 weeks rest, Frosted and Materiality. And as much as I dislike Mubtahij going into the Derby, I'm going to give him a shot with the 5 weeks rest and actually getting to train here instead of shipping to Arlington, then having to go to Churchill, et cetera. So I haven't really landed on a quote-unquote top pick yet, but I'm looking to upset the champ with one of those three.
He's going to be on the track in a little bit. Talking about Mubtahij, he's going to be out here in just a little bit, and he's going to train today. He's going to blow out. Now, this is Thursday before the Belmont. You like that move?
I'd yield my time to Jude on that one. I mean, every horse is different. So to me, if, a guy who's won as many races as Mike Dukac has, I think that's what he needs to fire his best shot on Saturday. And I've heard some rumblings that they're not going to be afraid to go to the front or at least get in the race more than they did in the Derby. So I guess in that regard, you want to see some brilliance more so than we saw in the Derby. So I get it from, sort of an empirical standpoint, but I won't pretend to know if it's good or bad for the horse.
Yeah, I think only Mike Dukat can answer that question, and we certainly don't want to second-guess him. He's one of the all-time greats.
I know back in the day, though, it wasn't rare for guys to go ahead and blow their horses out 3/8 of a mile on the morning of the race or the day before.
Right.
And you know, it's like you said, every horse is a unique individual, and those trainers, they know they have an intimate relationship with those horses and know what the little quirks and nuances are.
Well, we heard from Jack Van Berg on this program yesterday, and he talked about blowing Ellie Sheba out the morning of the Derby. And that, back then, was somewhat commonplace, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. You know, I learned a lot from Bobby Frankel, and Bobby used to blow horses out the morning of the race. A lot of times from the 5/8 pole to the half-mile pole, you know, down the backside, and then pull them up real quick. And I used that trick many, many times. Al Schweitzer, the late Al Schweitzer, who worked for Bobby for many years, Al used to come over and blow my horses out early in the morning because Frankel didn't start training till 6. And I was always out 5 o'clock. So Al would come in early and blow horses out down the backside. And it's really good for older horses, especially that, you know, maybe need to loosen up a little bit, and it puts them on their toes, and mentally it can really sharpen a horse up. So, it's a good little trick to use. I know people train a lot lighter these days than they used to. And you see a lot of guys like Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher hardly ever work anything over a half a mile. But, you know, there are little tricks to horses sometimes that put them mentally on their game, and blowing them out can do that.
Life hacks, the kids call them.
Yeah, that's right.
What is it, Ed, that gets American Pharoah beat on Saturday if you think he's getting beat?
I'd say there's a few things. I mean, some people chattering about the distance of the race, and, you know, given that there were some questions in a mile and a quarter, I can't fault people for wondering, you know, what might happen in a mile and a half. I'm not in that camp, but that's certainly one of the things people are talking about. I'll go back to just saying that this is a good group, and, you know, if Materiality or Frosted, two grade one winners, or, you know, Mubtaj runs the race we saw in the UAE Derby, he might just get beat by a better animal, a fresher animal. You know, I think some years you can look at Datar and say, you know, was he really the best that day or circumstance? But other years, I mean, Birdstone was a grade one winner over this track. Lemon Drop Kid was a big price, but he went on to be champion. Victory Gallop went on to be champion older male that year. I mean, good horses win this race even when they spoil the Triple Crown bid. I mean, look at Curlin. He lost to a great filly. So, you know, just because we're on the cusp of history and he's certainly proved to be the best horse so far doesn't mean he's going to be the best every time he runs, especially against a group I think is this good.
Oh, it's fascinating when we're listening to this, you know, the little kicker before we get come on here, and you listen to Ruler on Ice and Palace Malice, and you think of these crazy performances in the Derby. I mean, in the Belmont, we stood here and watched Saravo win and
commendable,
commendable in Datar. But then, as Ed said, then you actually can look and see, you know, serious, legitimate horses win the Belmont too. So, you know, you've seen it from both sides. You've seen these crazy performances that some of those horses never came back to maybe ever even win another race. But and then you see, you know, like Victory Gal. I mean, Victory Gal was a serious horse, and he was right there close with Real Quiet all along, and you know, beat him on the day. And you know, you think back, Silver Charm, that was a great group of horses. Any of those horses, you know, you could see any of them win in the race. So you know, this year, yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Materiality and Frosted and Mubtaj, I wanted to like. He just doesn't wow me when I look at him physically. But you know, Materiality, he's a type of horse that could, you know, he could be better than he's ever, you know, than we know. You know, I mean, he could, you know, with the 5 weeks from the Derby, and Frosted too. You know, maybe he's going the right way too. So at least there's some legitimate horses in there, and you know, he's got to run his best race to win.
What about Nick Zito? We throwing him out at our own peril?
It's you know, I mean, what he did with the Tara is pretty incredible. I mean, Birdstone too, but like I said before, he was a grade one winner over this track. Datara, sort of out of nowhere. And to me, even though he was a shorter price that day against a bigger favorite, that to me is way more shocking than Saravo, who was coming off a stakes win. And I mean, he's tough to throw out. The thing I say about the long shots this year, and in that group, I'd say is Fermento, Tale of Verve, Keen Ice, and I think I'm, well, Made from Lucky, I think, is probably a solid B horse. But when speaking of Fermento, I just think this year has been so formful, and the favorites only finished off the board in 1 points race. That was the Polytrack race at Turfway. American Pharoahs, galloped through the first two as the favorite. It's just really hard for me to see one of these horses who's been running in the low 90s, upper 80s on the Brisk scale all of a sudden jump up and beat these grade one winners who have shown they're extremely fast. And on top of that, have trainers who have won this race and pedigrees that indicate the mile and a half won't stop them or at least be a handicap. So, I'm not going too far out on a limb by trying to beat American Pharoah. I'm sticking with the logical horses, but I do think they're legitimate threats.
Ed DeRosa from BristNet.com joining us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can catch him tonight. Call in to talk some racing with Ed in the Big A from 6 to 7 Eastern on Sirius 220 XM 206. It's the BristNet.com call-in show that we bring you every Thursday night right here on HRRN. Ed, we are all sitting here with our BristNet PPs in front
of
us.
I love it.
We'll not bet the races without having our Brist PPs. What can people expect when they go to BristNet.com for Belmont Week?
Yeah, BristNet.com/Belmont is where all the action is this week, in addition to the PPs you referenced, which were available yesterday. Tons of great analysis products. We have the Thomas Herding Technique back, which was very popular at Derby time. Kerry Thomas and Pete Dank providing that. Michael Baychalk has some thoughts. Pretty much everything. If you do-it-yourself handicapper, obviously the PPs are where to start. But with the tremendous card of races and all those stakes, I have no problem, taking a peek at what other people think and making sure I'm covered, especially in my exotics. Press my strong opinions and the races I feel weakest in. Get some info from people I trust, and that's what BristNet tries to do.
It's all there for you at BristNet.com. My friend, appreciate the time. Go knock them dead on Belmont Day and have fun on the call-in show tonight.
Yeah, it's been a great Triple Crown season on there, and looking forward to hearing people call in and sorting it all out.
All right, 6 to 7 Eastern tonight right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Sirius 220 XM 206. It is the BristNet.com call-in show. We'll get away to a quick break. We'll come back with more live from Belmont on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's Run It history in the Belmont Stakes.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at BristNet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. BristNet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit BristNet.com/Belmont. That's BristNet.com/Belmont for the best reports, for the best racing, and discover why BristNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, this Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lascano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
El Kabir with his work cut out for him. He's six lengths off the lead with a long shot to catch as the New York bred 10 Sendor turns for home in front in the Wood Memorial. And Frosted runs at him on the outside. These two into the final furlong. 10 Sendor running the race of his life. Frosted draws even. Frosted. 10 Sendor fights on, but Frosted's got it. And he's pulling away. And Frosted has won the Wood Memorial. 10 Sendor was second, El Kabir was third, and Daredevil was fourth.
Larry Colmus with the call of the Wood Memorial, and Frosted getting the victory that afternoon. He's hoping for a similar performance on Saturday in the 147th running of the mile-and-a-half Test of the Champion, the Belmont Stakes. Of course, you'll hear it right here on HRN. Beginning 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Saturday afternoon. That is when our exclusive race coverage hits the airwaves, and you can listen in on affiliates across the country and on Sirius XM satellite radio. That race coverage being carried on Sirius 92, XM 92 on Saturday afternoon. Going to be a lot of fun, gentlemen, and that undercard is absolutely spectacular when you start looking at races like the Ogden Phipps and the Met Mile and the Jiper and all those great races. It's tremendous.
No, it's incredible. And downloading that form is just like, you just can't believe one race after another. And looking at the horses that are running, it's just, what a card.
It resembles a Breeders' Cup day. It really does, the way they packed Belmont Stakes Day here in New York with multiple graded stakes races. Roster of horses is phenomenal.
Yeah, they got the first three races are kind of chalky, it looks like, but in short fields. But after that, it really starts getting deep.
Elliot Walden meeting jockey Javier Castellano out there on the apron. Elliot's going to swing by and join us here in just a couple of moments. And Elliot, of course, part of that memorable day with Victory Gallop when he denied Real Quiet the Triple Crown. We'll talk to him about that and what it's like to be the spoiler on a big day like that.
Watching those guys talk down there, it's very reminiscent of the Wilt Chamberlain Bill Shoemaker photo many, many years ago. I mean, Elliot, a very tall man, could have easily, you know, been an NBA player, and Javier, diminutive as always, and pretty classic, really.
Yeah, and here comes the big man now, the head of Windstar Farm. He is Elliot Walden, and other than being a Cincinnati Bengal fan, he's actually a pretty good guy.
he's my favorite.
Come on, dude.
I just said you're my favorite. I was just saying how watching you and Javier talk, it's reminiscent of that Wilt Chamberlain Bill Shoemaker photo from many years ago.
That's about right. That's about right. Look like the Verizon bar.
Especially at Belmont Park on Belmont Day.
Happy Belmont Week, my friend.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Excited to be here.
This is a place that brings back some pretty good memories for you.
Yes, it does. It sure does. You know, I was in Bob's barn this morning looking at American Pharoah and talking to him, and he said, "This is the guy that screwed up my Triple Crown the first time."
Yeah, denying Real Quiet back in 1998, and Victory Gallop getting up to win by a nostril, of course, trained by Elliot Walden. And Elliot, take us back to that day. What do you remember about the running of that race? I'm sure you remember almost every detail.
Yeah, it was a hectic day because I'd broken my ankle 9 days before, so I was on crutches. And the first thing was I was trying to figure out if I wanted to saddle him or not. And with all the – on a normal day, I probably would have. But with that day, I just didn't want to be – I didn't want anything to get in the way of – so I asked Bill Mott to saddle him. So he saddled his first classic winner. We kidded him for a decade. Bill Drosselmeyer pulled it off for him, actually. But that was a trivia question, if Bill Mott had ever saddled a classic winner. But, so it was hot and horse was doing good, and it was just an exciting day when they came down to the finish line. It was very close. Didn't know who won, and that added to the thrill.
Were you able to watch the race in a place where you could see all the action?
Yeah. Yeah, I was upstairs and then had to hike down with the crutches. I was tired by the end of the day, for sure.
He probably didn't even know he had an ankle making it down to the winner's circle of the Belmont, right? You don't even feel the pain at that point.
No,
do you
don't. But you didn't know if he won or not.
Yeah.
So it was a photo. I mean, I didn't know if he'd won. I thought he'd gotten beat, actually, just because of the fact that
that he'd gotten beat the two times before, and I'm like, not again.
It's a unique situation to be in, isn't it? As a race fan, you've got the whole world rooting and cheering for this Triple Crown winner, but as a trainer of your own horse, you got a job to do, and you're out there, and you're supposed to win the race. What's that feeling like? What's going on in your mind?
There's no feeling there. No, there's no, you know, Victor Gallup was my boy. You know, it'd be like watching your son play basketball. And,
sure.
And, you know, you don't think about the other team when it's your son, you know. So I didn't have any thoughts about that. I was just happy that he won one because he deserved to win one. He was a good horse and ended up being champion 4-year-old. And, you know, he deserved his day in the sun. It's nice to get it.
And that's what it's about anyways, right? I mean, you don't want to just give a Triple Crown away to a horse. I mean, they've got to earn it, and we throw the best horses we can in those kinds of races. Absolutely. And let the best horse win on a day like that.
Yeah, and I've always said that a Triple Crown winner will not let somebody beat him. You know, they won't be denied. And Affirm, you can look at Affirm and think about Alidar, who's a great horse. He just wasn't going to let him beat him.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Isn't it funny the way this game works, though? Elliot, here you are now as the head of Windstar Farm. You stand the sire of American Pharoah, Pioneer of the Nile. And American Pharoah is trained by Bob Baffert, who you denied the Triple Crown. So it's amazing the way this whole thing just kind of comes full circle, isn't it?
We're on the same team this week.
I guess that's why he let you in the barn morning.
That and his two breeding rights in Pioneer of the Nile. He wants to make sure they're well looked after.
Still in that contract. Oh,
yeah. Speaking of breeding rights, did Bill Mott get at least a season out of that?
No, he didn't get anything.
Oh, man.
He got Drosselmeyer 12 years later.
So. You said, don't worry, something's coming down the line.
I don't know how or why.
Elliot Walden, Windstar Farm, joining us here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Your impressions of American Pharoah?
Great. You know, just he looks great. And went up Memorial Day and watched him train. And just the thing that impressed me is what Jim Barnes told me, that he weighed the same. They weighed him like a week and a half ago or something. He weighed the same as he did when he left Santa Anita the first time for the Arkansas Derby. That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
After going through the Derby and the Preakness and stay the same, you know. That's a sign that the horse is not taking its toll on him. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think if he wins it, he's going to earn it. I think Materiality and Frosted are two really good horses that are doing well. And I don't see anybody else beating him, but I think one of those two is possible.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I do so many radio interviews around the country this week, Elliot, and the one question that always comes up is, why haven't we had a Triple Crown winner in 37 years? So I'll ask you, why has it been so difficult? Why haven't we had one?
You know, it's just one of those things. Why hadn't we had an undefeated basketball team since Indiana? Why hadn't we had an undefeated NFL team since the Miami Dolphins? It's just not hard. Now, you did have a run in the 70s where there were three, you know, in a decade. But, you know, it's just a really hard thing to do. And I do think that probably it's harder today than it used to be, because I even think about Victor Gallup. You know, would I run him in the Belmont after he'd gotten beat in the other two, or would I run him in the Preakness if he'd gotten beat in the Derby and just waited on the Belmont? Now people are thinking differently than they did back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. They you know, back then you ran. You know, it was a big race. It was the premier of our sport. Let's go. Let's. But now it's more strategic. And so you've got Materiality and Frosted waiting 5 weeks, being at the top of their game. You know, Steve Coburn probably wasn't too far off. His delivery method wasn't great. But, you know, just
what
the frustration,
way of putting it.
Just the frustration of, you know, those guys waiting, shooting targets at you. But, you know, we'll see what happens this weekend. I mean, like I said, he is a horse to be revered if he wins the way it's done now.
Would you be in favor of changing the format?
You know, there's times I am and there's times I'm not. I mean, you know, I think that for the good of racing, it probably should be changed. I think you could. The whole goal is to create these days where we want people to show an interest. And the more, so do you think about things that can then get more horses on the day? Okay, and so if people are changing their habits about how they run their horses, maybe we need to change our habits about when we schedule the races so that we can – the goal is to get good races. The goal is not to get a Triple Crown winner. The goal is to get good competitive races. So how do we do that? So with that, the conversation could lead towards stretching it out to 4 weeks and 4 weeks, something like that, bump the purse three times as much and make these guys, you know, something like that.
Well, I think you mentioned the mentality of people, and so many people want to run in these races. In the old days, it's kind of like strikeouts in MLB. Players used to be embarrassed to strike out. Now they don't care as long as they hit home runs.
Right.
They'd strike out, you know, 300 times a season. But people want to run in these races. They really, really want the free lunch. They want the notoriety. They want to come out and do it. And in the old days, people would be embarrassed to run a horse against Seattle Slough because they knew they were going to get their butt kicked, and they just said, oh, I'm not going to embarrass myself. Yeah. So it's a whole different mentality now.
Yeah.
Elliot, looks like the media members are starting to assemble down by the rail, which means the big horse is getting ready to make his way out, and I know you want to go see that, so we'll let you go, but really appreciate you stopping by for a
Thank
few
you.
Minutes, and good luck on Saturday, man.
All right, good luck to everybody, and let's have a great weekend.
All right, Elliot Walden, always a lot of fun to have him here on the program. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back, and yeah, American Pharoah making his way out for his gallop here this morning. We'll tell you all about it next on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage. Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians want to produce a horse at sale with clean radiographs and consequently seek out early non-surgical means to increase blood flow and available calcium to lesions in the stifle, hock, and fetlocks as weanlings. Of course, there is no substitute for a sound mare and foal feeding program to avoid these issues in the weanling. All just another part of keeping your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Cal Density. Ingredients in Cal Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit CalDensity.com.
The Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint Day is Saturday, May 30th. Evangeline Downs Racetrack Casino in Opelousas, Louisiana is running 11 exciting thoroughbred races with 5 stakes events worth $640,000. And the $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint is the centerpiece of the day's great betting action. Bet big, win big. Play the $100,000 guaranteed all stakes pick four, races 5 through 8. Bet all the races at DRF Bets or at any simulcast location. Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post time, 4:05 p.m. Eastern. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.bets.com and EVDTurfSprint.com. Don't forget, the $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint Day, Saturday, May 30th.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, he's a very good eater, so that's one plus on our side. His appetite's great. Knock on wood, he's physically very good. You know, he likes to train. He's not an overly aggressive type training horse that I think would get over a peak. So we'll just be up there managing. Try to get him on that peak performance, and because he's going to need to be, because there's a bunch of going to be a lot of nice horses in there, and you know, hopefully we'll have him right on tilt, ready to go.
Trainer Dallas Stewart, who sends out Longshot Tale of Verve,
runner-up in the Preakness to American Pharoah. Feels like he's in a pretty good position, but he has work to do. And the big horse, American Pharoah, galloping past us just moments ago here at Belmont Park. Welcome back to the Triple Crown Countdown. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom just about 50 yards on the main track, and American Pharoah just gliding past us here, guys. Looked like he was just handling this surface very, very well. Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah, he looked perfect there. I mean, nothing to worry about. He went on the racetrack the right way. Yesterday we talked about him backing up and jogging. Today he came on the gap and jogged off the right way with his pony and broke into a gallop and basically galloped once around, a little bit less than a mile and a half, and looked smooth, perfect. I mean, I wouldn't worry about anything. I mean, as we've talked about, we've been here in weeks and years prior that you're standing here on Wednesday, Thursday going, oh, God, I don't know. You know, Funny Side was getting stronger and stronger. You just couldn't hold him, and Smarty Jones was kind of coming apart, and certainly I'll have another, and I wouldn't worry about anything with this horse, at least what we saw today. And Mubtahij actually just going past us now. He's having what we call a blowout, a little bit of a stronger gallop down on the rail. Under a tight hold, but I think he probably went a quarter mile blowing
out. He does have that high knee action, doesn't he?
Too much knee.
He really doesn't look like a dirt horse to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't look nearly as smooth as American Pharoah. Boy, you can see the difference between the two now that they've galloped past together.
Well, American Pharoah's poetry in motion. Yeah. He's an impressive mover as I think I've ever seen in terms of the efficiency of his stride. And his feet barely get off the ground. Everything he does is easy.
He just looked like he wanted to do a little more. Don't want to give away the Baffert interview, so I won't, because it's really good and people are going to enjoy that coming up shortly. But, I mean, this horse, he just really seems to get it. You know, he knows what's going on at all times. And he was super easy to pull up. I mean, he just, you know, okay, we're going to go a mile today. So it's like he knows where the pole is. I'll just slow down, pull up, turn around. He does everything just effortlessly. He's like a Maserati or something. He's unbelievable.
Oh, I talked about it at the Preakness on our show that he was quiet coming over for the Preakness, much quieter than the Derby. The Derby, he was really on the – he was really pulling against the shank and walking over there, neck bowed, head down, really kind of grinding his teeth walking over. And the Preakness, he was very quiet. And I said on the radio that day, I don't know if it's a negative or a positive because he's so quiet. You know, you don't really know. But obviously the way he ran, it was a positive, almost like he's handling the rigors of it and kind of, you know, handling it with aplomb and just kind of taking it all in without stressing out or worrying about it, which is a great, you know, that's exactly what you want as you try to get through this, through the grind of three races in 5 weeks.
He doesn't look any worse for wear. And we talk about horses like Frosted and Materiality who are talented runners that skip the Preakness and now come here on a five-week rest period, so to speak. American Pharoah had to contest the other two legs, and doesn't look like it took anything out of him, does it?
No, and in my opinion, that can only help him. I mean, the fresh horse thing, I think, is way overdone. You know, this horse has a lot of foundation. He does everything effortlessly. He's obviously, actually a little bit heavier now than he was, which is a good sign. He certainly hasn't fallen apart in any way, shape, or form. And so, I think, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but if you match raced him against every horse in the field, he would win every time. Every time he would win. So, you know, I just really think he's the real deal.
Some horses actually improve with more training and more racing. You know, it's like we talk about this all the time. Each horse is an individual, and they have different ways about them. And, you know, as Elliot mentioned, this horse hasn't lost any weight. So American Pharoah, you see it in him when he's on the track. You see it around the barn. He doesn't get affected. He doesn't have a negative reaction to the issue of shipping around to a new racetrack and having the media attention around him. And so he thrives on it. He embraces it. Like Jude said, he's a push-button horse. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to pull up here. I'll pull up here. He takes a hold. He's in the bit.
but he's not uncontrollable. It's everything about him is just all of those check boxes you want in a horse that could potentially win something like the Triple Crown.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting yesterday that Baffert kind of told the security guards to slack off a little bit over at the barn because, you know, people want to get their pictures and stuff. And he said that American Pharoah really enjoys that part of his life and to not be so tough on the crowd. You know, let him enjoy this horse. Let him have a good time. The horse likes it, and it's part of his, you know, entertainment. Good horses are usually really smart horses, and you know, they like to be entertained. They're in their stalls a lot and stuff. So if you find something that a horse really enjoys, and in this case, I guess American Pharoah likes his bath shots in the morning and that kind of thing. So you know, why not let him have a good time? And I think that's the whole key coming into the Belmont is to keep him happy.
You know, as good as American Pharoah has been, and as much as everybody wants to see this happen after 37 years, it just seems to me, guys, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, that there's a different vibe here at Belmont this year than what we saw last year with California Chrome. The story behind California Chrome was so unbelievable that, you know, here's two guys that could buy this horse for a minimal price, and then all of a sudden he's going for the Triple Crown. And Art Sherman, 70-some-odd years old, oldest trainer to win the Kentucky Derby, and he's training the horse with his son. It was just a really good, feel-good type of story, and there was a different vibe. I don't feel that same vibe here this year, and I don't know if it's because of what's happened in the public eye with Ahmed Zayat, the owner of American Pharoah, where he's had his fair share of legal issues and troubles financially. I don't know if that's part of it, but it just doesn't seem like there's the same vibe that we had last year here. Agree or disagree?
I agree somewhat. I think part of it is the fact that it's Baffert, and it's kind of old news. I mean, the guy does this all the time, and you know, from a racing fan, a true racing fan's perspective, you know, oh, Bob Baffert's got a chance at the Triple Crown again. Well, he's, you know, he's had a few chances at the Triple Crown again. So, you know, why would this year be any different kind of thing? I think that people have seen this play before.
Bob's a likable guy.
Oh, it's nothing against Baffert. Yeah. I don't think it's anything against Baffert. No. I mean, a lot of people, you know, love Bob Baffert, I mean, he is a likable guy. He's fun to be around. I mean, I've known him since he got in thoroughbred racing, and I enjoy pretty much every minute I spend with Bob Baffert. But you know, it's like it's like Groundhog Day. You know, we're seeing it again, and it's not as big of a deal than you get, you know, two guys that come from nowhere that buy a mare for $8 and breeder in California and come up with this ridiculously talented horse who may actually win a race at Royal Ascot, which is even crazier than anything that's happened so far. So, you know, I mean, that's like a different kind of story. So I don't think it's a knock on the horse or the ownership or the trainer. It's just a replay of similar circumstances.
Just got our first look at Keen Ice. We're going to tell you more about him in just a moment. But first, let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Keen Ice for trainer Dale Romans walking by us the wrong way, expecting him to turn and do a little bit of work here this morning. It's his first appearance, at least that we've seen here on the track at Belmont Park. He'll be a long shot on Saturday. He's a son of Horse of the Year Curlin, so he has a great pedigree. You remember Curlin, runner-up in the Belmont in 2007 behind the sensational filly Rags to Riches. And Keen Ice looking okay as he made his first stop to the Belmont track here this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a horse that comes from out of the clouds. He'll be making a run at the end, regardless of the pace scenario.
And another horse that skipped the Preakness after running in the Derby.
And well, he should have.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't run particularly well. It didn't run poorly, though. He was, what, seventh in the Derby? So
yeah.
He ran okay.
Yeah,
you know,
he's an okay horse.
Yeah, he'll come running at the end. But, again, everybody trying to beat the big horse, American Pharoah, and we'll see if they can pull it off. All that coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Want to remind you that you can go to kaledensity.com, and if you're listening to these Triple Crown Countdown shows yesterday, today, and tomorrow morning from 8 to 10, all you have to do is place your order now, and you'll get free shipping just for being an HRRN
10 listener. You go to kaledensity.com. The product is unbelievable. You place your order, you type in promo code HRRN, and you get free shipping. It's all there for you at kaledensity.com. We're going to step away for a short break. When we come back, we will hear from Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert as he talks about being here for the fourth time and what it's been like over the past several days for him. We'll hear from him next. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's run at history in the Belmont Stakes.
Enjoy fractional racehorse ownership with a leader. In 2014, West Point Thoroughbreds led all North American-based public partnerships with over $4.4 million in purse earnings and 11 stakes wins. Own with a partnership that has delivered premium racing experiences for over 20 years, including a runner-up finish in last year's Kentucky Derby. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtisintombisinboy.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Join HRRN for Saturdays at Saratoga. Beginning with the opening Saturday of the Saratoga meet on July 25th, we'll broadcast live from the spa with exclusive coverage of the world's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. Saturdays at Saratoga, only here on HRRN. See a complete schedule or listen online at horseracingradio.net.
If you haven't already made the Horse Racing Radio Network your home for thoroughbred racing action, then now is the time to visit horseracingradio.net. Check out our broadcast schedule to see where and when we will be bringing you the best in thoroughbred racing from the rail to your radio. As always, you can listen to our free live streaming anywhere in the world at horseracingradio.net. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at twitter.com/HRRN or on our fan page on Facebook. We'll bring all the best racing information to you with broadcast information, pictures from the track, and news updates as soon as we hear it. Remember, that's twitter.com/HRRN for all the updates as soon as we hear them. Don't miss out on all the action. Get in the game with Horse Racing Radio Network today at horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
This is David Cohen, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Off the head, moved up with 250 meters left to go, went straight past the leading pair and went for home. Christophe Sirmion put his foot flat to the pedal, and the derby's all over. Off the head is absolutely tearing away. It's a matter of how far. Eased in the run of the judge, has won the derby with Maftool running on to get second but beaten a long way. Golden Barrows third, Mokhtar fourth, and then came Tap That, followed by Sir Fever, then Faithful Creek, Theodermas, My Johnny Be Good, and a long break to Elder Gem El Faze, last of all.
Getting the victory that day. He was eighth in the Kentucky Derby, skipped the Preakness, and here he is in the Belmont Stakes. Some people thinking, like our Ed DeRosa from Bristat.com, who joined us in the first half of the show, that he might be the one to pull off the upset. He would be the 10th horse bred outside the United States to win the Belmont, the last one to do it. Well, Victory Gallop in 1998. People forget he was a Canadian bred. How about that?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Are we looking for a sponsor from Canadian Breeders Fund?
That's not a bad idea.
That's a good idea.
I'll send him that clip. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Elliot Walden was here in the first half of the show as well. And by the way, you can go back and catch a podcast of this program if you missed any portion of it at horseracingradio.net after 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning. And, Elliot looked back on that day in 98, and it was great because he denied Real Quiet the Triple Crown for trainer Bob Baffert. And, Jeff, your question was great. And he says, no, there's no remorse. He didn't feel bad about it at all. He was just happy to win the Belmont Stakes.
There was no hesitation in his response to that question whatsoever. And who can blame him, right? I mean, what the heck? He's got his horse, and he's going to go out there and try to win it.
course, is still on the track training, but most of the Belmont horses have done those preparations. King Ice may still be out there. Dale Romans is over next to us here in the Belmont Cafe. We're going to try to have him join us in just a few minutes. But I did mention that Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert took the time to sit down with me yesterday. He talked about the previous three opportunities he's had and then looked ahead to what might happen here on Saturday.
Here with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. And Bob, you know, thinking back, coming here for the fourth time now with an opportunity to win the Triple Crown is in itself somewhat surreal, but nobody ever forgets the first one. And take me back to Silver Charm and what it was like winning the Derby and Preakness and then coming here and standing on the brink of history.
Well, that was something that we really, I was never prepared for and had no idea how to go into it. And I remember after I won the Preakness, I called Steve Haskett up, a good friend, and I said, Steve, is there a way you could look up, and, you know, I don't know how to do it, but find out how they work, the work pattern for a firm, Seattle SLU, and Secretariat. So he looked it up, and he sent me the work patterns, and I thought, man, if I do that, I'm not going to have a horse left. I mean, they came back. I remember Secretariat, like a week later, he worked like 5/8 or 3/4. Then he came back 5 or 6 days later, worked a mile and 1:34 and change, and then came back and worked 58 or blew out in 46. It was just an incredible, I mean, what a horse to do something like that. So it just goes to show you that, you know, those horses that have won the Triple Crown, how good and how tough they are. And Seattle SLU, he had like three, you know, really strong works like that. It's just something that it was like if I couldn't have done it with my horses. So I knew going in I was going to have to change it up a little bit, and I didn't know if it was going to work or not. But I was dealing with, you know, the when I look back now, the difference was is that Silver Charm was running against some really good horses. It was every race was a battle. You know, he had Free House. Then he had to fend off Captain Bodget, who was a really good horse. Then coming back 2 weeks later, Touch Gold joined the fray. And Touch Gold, easily, he could have won that race. He stumbled badly, had trouble. And so, you know, going in there, I thought, well, maybe we got lucky there. And then coming to the Belmont, we had Free House again. And McCarran rode probably one of the best Belmont races ever. When Kent DeSormo took off with Free House, made a little early run early, and Gary moved with him, and Chris didn't go. So Gary Steven thought, you know, we thought Touch Gold was the horse to beat. He thought maybe Touch Gold was just didn't have it, but he didn't know that McCarran just was just sitting on him waiting. And then he made that swoop around there and turned for home. I thought I was going to win. You know, it looked like he was going to. I knew he could out-battle Free House, but then here came McCarran on the outside, and it was. I just saw it unfolding the last 100 yards like, well, it's not going to happen. It's sort of like, you know, all this way and you're exhausted. And then, you know you're going to get beat the last 100 yards. And it was just, it was tough. You know, with me, I was like, you know, you got the cameras in your faces and they hit the wire. And Bob Lewis, he turned to me and said, "That's a shame, Robert." And that was it, you know, and he was such a great guy. And so but it was a lot of fun leading up to that.
And then could you ever imagine you'd be back in that same position 1 year later with Real Quiet?
Yeah, I mean, then I come back with Mike Pegram because he was with me the whole time with Silver Charm. He rode with me on the plane. We were sitting on the, you know, coming with the plane, the only horse in there and on the, with Silver Charm. And then he goes through it the same way. And we're sitting on that same ice chest on Tech Sutton plane, you know, coming over with Real Quiet with a police escort. It was just a lot of fun and. He had all his people here, and you know, and I thought he'd run well, and he was, you know, we knew Victory Gallop was the horse to beat, and they turned for home, and he's, you know, Kent takes off, and he's got like a five length, he's in front by five lengths, and I'm thinking he's coming down, and I keep looking for Victory Gallop, and he was making a run, but I thought, you know, we have a pretty good jump on him, and I thought, wow, for an instant, I thought, man, I'm going to win the Triple Crown. It was like a different feeling, you know, and so it wasn't really, I think the only time I wasn't really cheering, I was just like watching it happen. like I couldn't believe it for, you know, and then all of a sudden I see here comes Victory Gallop, and he's coming to us, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And then when they hit the wire, it was like, I know it was a head bob, and my, at the angle where I was sitting, it looked like he had won, but it was like, I thought, I think I won, but I'm not sure. But I kept thinking there was a lot of butts going on, but it was a different feeling. It wasn't like, you know, you're sort of glad it's over because you're exhausted. You're just really exhausted because I was doing every radio show, my voice was gone. I was just exhausted. And so it was really, you know, the photo, and then there was an inquiry, and then you're looking around at strangers, like, I'm asking them, what do you think? You know, I'm asking everybody, oh, you got it, Bob. And some guy says, oh, I don't know. And I remember Wayne Lucas was sitting in front of me, and I said, Wayne, what do you think? And he says, you got it. And he walked off. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Wayne, he knows, you know. And Mike Pegram, he never made it to his box because of the crowd. And so he was stuck behind there. And I remember he was behind Denny Phipps's box. And Denny was the only one at the time that had a TV monitor in his box. Yeah. And so he looked, and Mike asked him, and he just turned around and says, oh, you got it. And like, but then all of a sudden when the number came up, it was like, oh, how can you go a mile and a half and get beat a nose? I mean, that just, to me, that's why I say it's all fate. And so, but it was an exciting run. And, you know, I felt good about my, you know, Silver Charm and Real Quiet, that I felt pretty good that, you know, they ran their races. They just got beat. And so it really made me feel, you know, we did it. We just couldn't get it done.
You've always been very confident in your abilities, but that result had to be a little bit deflating for you, was it?
I think it's disappointing in a way where, you know, you've came all this way and you're just been riding a high since the Derby. I mean, when the Derby's probably, it's the highest of the highs. And so, and then when I came back with a Point Given, you know, that's a horse I really thought was going to be my Triple Crown horse. And then when he didn't get it done in the Derby, that was really disappointing. I was shocked that he didn't win that race. And then he came back, won the Preakness, and then he came with the Belmont. I knew he was just so much the best. And so, and when he won that day, it was like, wow. I was really, you know, I'd rather win the Derby than the Preakness and the Belmont. There's just something about it. I would have traded. You know, so it makes you really feel about, you know, the importance. I mean, the Derby is really the most important one.
And War Emblem, he was more like a claim for you. You didn't have a whole lot of time to work with him and develop him. It was a bit of a different scenario.
I didn't, but it was still a lot of fun to have him and, you know, to buy him and to prep him for that race and win the Derby with him. And then the Preakness, we weren't really sure, you know, his speed. He had to have everything his own way. And there was a speed horse, took him on, and he was really, in the Preakness, he was at the end there, he was getting a little tired, and he was a light horse. I mean, when I bought him, I weighed him, 970 pounds. That's light.
Really?
I mean, you know, you've got a horse like Point Given, he always weighed 1280, you know, Dortmund, you know, 1280, 1290, Pharaoh, his weight was 1178, and so he goes in there 970. I got him up to about 1,040, you know, for the Derby. 1,040 around there. And then after the Preakness, he started shriveling up on me. You know, I could tell he just couldn't handle it. He looked better with a saddle on him. I remember when I went to buy him, when they brought him out, he really, like, put the saddle on him. We put the saddle, okay, I'll take him, you know. But so, and I remember the veterinarian, when I called him up, I said, hey, go check out this horse. I'm flying tomorrow. I'm going to buy this horse. And he called me up. He said, well, Bob, I checked him out. And, you know, he looks pretty clean-legged. And I don't think you're going to like this horse. He says, he's a little light in the back. And he says, it doesn't matter. Hey, I didn't ask you for a confirmation clinic, dude. This horse just ran off the screen. I just want to know how his legs are. And he said, well, no, his legs are – that's all I need to know, you know. So we go over there, we look at him, we fly, over there to get him. It was Richard Mohol who was the he worked for the he just passed away a couple of days ago, poor guy. And but we flew over and he looked at him, and I said, yeah, he does look a little, you know. And then once they put the saddle on him, he looked a lot better. So we bought him, and so I sent him down to Louisville. I had to fly back to California because I had officer there, and so I sent him down to my assistant John Good at the time. He was in charge of the Churchill Downs. So I said, call me when he gets there. So he calls me up. He says, and his Irish kid, he goes, hey, Bob, yeah, that horse arrived. Have you seen him? I go, yeah. He says, he's not much to look at. I said, hey, I don't want to hear that. I go, don't worry, just start feeding him, will you? Just start feeding him. He says, he's a, and so, but he was tough. He was really tough. He was sort of a rogue, you know, and he was just a nasty attitude, but he could really run. And as long as he got his own way, he was really tough.
Yeah, I can remember you saying a couple of times that after he stumbled at the start in the Belmont that you just had to sit there and endure that mile and a half. That couldn't have been easy.
Well, you know what? I was actually, I had a feeling he wasn't going to. That's the most nervous I think I've ever been for a race the night before, because they were making a big deal out of it. And down deep, I thought, you know what? I don't like the way he's coming into this race. He's just not, he's getting a little, like he was just, he looked great when he galloped here, but I just knew they were going to take him on. He was going to get his trip, and the speed horses were lining up against him. And so I knew it was going to be tough on him.
So what's different this time around?
I think I've got a really good horse. I think he's shown that, you know, he's got that, he's a cut above, you know, right now I feel like he's the best horse of the bunch, but he still has to get around there the mile and a half. He's going to have to get, you know, the pace is going to be important for him. And we all know that, you know, he's not going to be from coming off the pace or anything like that. He's just a free running horse. So I think, you know, the first half of the race could be very important. So, but I think he's special. I just love the way, I've never had a horse that moves like he does. And from day one, I've always thought he was something really special. And he's got a pretty good mind. And he's just, when you watch him run, he looks like he's really enjoying it. That's what I love about him, because he's got that long stride and he throws those ears forward. And he just, you know, he just looks like he's having fun. And most of those horses, they get in there, they're battling other horses. And he's not. He just looks like he's, and I think he knows that when he's in that groove, he knows he's better than them. You know, and he's fast. He can get to a spot. It's like he's got gears where he can accelerate without using a lot of energy. He can get to a spot without using, and that's what I like about him.
Tell me what's different about Bob Baffert this time around than in the previous three.
Well, I think those previous, when I came up here, I was like, I was a little high on myself, and but I really enjoyed it. I was sort of a ham, you know. I like to ham it up. I couldn't wait to get interviewed. I couldn't wait to see myself, you know. I thought, you know, every time I'd read a newspaper, I'd check out, read about myself, like, hey, I'm getting, everybody thought, and you know what, you start doing that, and you start thinking, I'm a pretty smart guy, you know. I'm like, I'm going to bring, I want to solve the world's problems, you know. Like, this is what they need to do. I'll tell you what the president needs to do. He needs to be, you know, pretty soon you're like, and you know what? And I can see, like, when you see these actors and stuff, they start, you know, they want to solve the world's problems. And that's what it is. You get in this groove where when you see yourself in print, you start thinking, you know what? They're listening to me. But, you know, we can be sitting in a bar or a restaurant and say, yeah, you know, they need to do this in Iraq or whatever. We'll just, you know. But then when they write it, it's like, hey, we really know what I think. So I really, it was a different, and I was younger, and I was really, you know, I was just going with the flow, and so I was just having fun with it.
Enough's enough already. Go win the Triple Crown, will you?
Well, I think we have the horse to do it. He looks really well. He's come back and worked well. It's just, but at the back of my mind, I know how difficult it is. I know it's, and I've seen good horses come in here, you know, like, this race is like, I was listening to one of the old Laker coach, Riley, Pat Riley. And they used his quote the other day, and the Belmont is like, you know, in the championship games, there's winning and misery. That's it. So, you know, I know that. So that's what I'm hoping we maybe pull it off. And I feel a lot of pressure when I get here for the fans. They've been coming here. And so, I mean, everybody's going to be rooting for the horse. So, but so far, you know, just as long as we have a few more good days, we'll be in good shape.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, a very candid interview with me yesterday. And you heard him say at the end, there's winning and misery, quoting Lakers coach Pat Riley. And Bob Baffert certainly knows both of those.
Yeah, no kidding. The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, as they used to say when I was a boy.
It's such a fine line, such a huge separator after a big race like, say, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont, where you have all these trainers, you have the connections, and then they run the race. And one group gets to go into the winner's circle, and all those others have to go back down on the track and they unsaddle the horse and talk to the jockey, and it's such a stark contrast between
formulate that, their excuses.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, and it all changes within a couple of minutes. All this buildup. I mean, we're talking about buildup for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden, boom! After a couple of minutes, that balloon's been deflated for somebody, and yet, for the winning connections, they get to ride it.
Yeah, cloud nine.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to see the definition of losing, look at the trainer in the 2 minutes after the race, from the time the horse crosses the wire to when he walks down, that walk from wherever he's sitting or wherever he's watching the race, from there to the track to go greet his horse and his jockey, and look at his face, and look, you can just see it right there on that that moment of defeat. And we're talking about this card on Saturday. It's an amazing card. How many races are there? 13?
Yeah.
There'll be 13 winners on the day. 13.
A lot more losers.
Yeah. How many horses are running? I mean, it's about 10. You know, let's say there's 10 horses in each race. There's 130. You got 117 losers.
Well, it's like anything. It's like the NFL, right? You start off the season. Everybody starts at training camp, and you go through. Major League Baseball, the same thing. You start in spring training. You put all that work, all that time, all that dedication, all that effort in, and at the end, there's only one team that's happy. And same thing with the Belmont Stakes. There's only going to be one set of connections that are going to be happy on Saturday. And, of course, Bob Baffert hoping it's him. He hasn't had that feeling in three other times trying to pull off the Triple Crown. Now, he has had the feeling with Point Given, and that's one that maybe gets Bob Baffert more than any of the other opportunities he's had. Now, he didn't have a chance to win the Triple Crown with Point Given when he came here because he had been beaten in the Kentucky Derby, but he did win the Preakness and then dominated the Belmont. And you heard Bob say in the interview that that was the one that really kind of got to him because he felt like Point Given was the horse to beat that year.
Well, it got to me, too. I still haven't gotten over it, and I had absolutely nothing to do with Point Given, but it was the most shocking Derby result that I've ever seen, and after that, the horse proved what a great horse he was. But Point Given, that's the one that's often forgotten because he didn't win the Kentucky Derby, and Baffert said he would trade his Preakness in Belmont for the Kentucky Derby, which I thought was really a telling thing. That's how important the Kentucky Derby is.
Just got to look at one of the horses that will try to dethrone American Pharoah on Saturday. That's Frosted, who just made his way onto the track. We heard from trainer Kieran McLaughlin on this program yesterday morning, and Frosted, the gray son of leading sire Tappet, who stands at Gainesway down in Lexington, Kentucky, really looking the part here on the track this morning.
Yeah, he looks good. Just jogged past, ears up, real sound, hitting the ground square. I think he'll probably go for a little gallop, but you can't fault him. You can't fault how he's run him. He's really improved over from the time we saw him in Gulfstream Park till the Derby. He's had the 5 weeks, and, he's a live horse. I think most people will tell you if anybody's going to beat American Pharoah, it'll be Materiality or Frosted.
Yeah, Elliot Walden said that.
Legitimate horses. Yeah, they're nice horses and maybe getting better. You know, I think what we've seen of them so far probably won't beat them, but if they improve a little, which they have a license to improve, maybe they could.
Kieran standing with the folks from Darley, Jimmy Bell, and Dan Pride, and they're about ready to watch Frosted do his thing out here on the track this morning. And it, again, you're just on pins and needles now, hoping everything goes well. Just come off the track, make everything smooth, and let's get back to the barn and get ready for Saturday.
And it's interesting, we're talking about the couple of horses that could potentially be the upsetters against American Pharoah. Very little talk has been made, Mike, about your horse, Tale of Verb, the runner-up in the Kentucky Derby. And here's another horse that had some time off now.
My Preakness horse.
I mean, I'm sorry. Jude was looking at me like I didn't know what I was saying, and he was right. But you were delirious. It's the jet lag. But Tale of Verb, who did in fact pick up the pieces and make a huge run in the Preakness to get up for runner-up position, but very little talk about Tale of Verb as being the potential upsetter here in the Belmont Stakes after running that big race in the Preakness Stakes.
All Fermento. That's all I'm going to say. That's my rally.
So you're jumping off the Tale of Verb.
Jumping off the Tale of Verb.
Fermento.
You were the only one on there for the Preakness, and now you just stepped off.
I got to say, I felt a lot better about American
Pharoah. I went
Pharoah
to the wedding.
When Ed
Don't
said
go
he was
to the
jumping
funeral.
Ship.
All right, we're going to step away for another break. We'll come back. We'll try to update you on what's happening with Frosted as he is out on this mile-and-a-half oval here at Big Sandy. This is the Triple Crown Countdown, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at brisnet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. Brisnet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit brisnet.com/Belmont. That's brisnet.com/Belmont for the best reports for the best racing. And discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge. Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
And it is a true privilege to be joined by legendary golfer and Hall of Famer Gary Player.
They say Frankel is the best horse. The British say that. They talk rubbish. Frankel is the best grass horse, maybe ever. But Secretary would have kicked his butt on dirt. So let's be reasonable. Say he was the best grass horse. Don't say he's the best, period. It's very, very deceiving and very incorrect.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Point Given is widely regarded as one of the most talented horses never to win the Triple Crown. Having finished a disappointing fifth as the favorite in the 2001 Kentucky Derby, he redeemed himself with a winning performance in the Preakness Stakes 2 weeks later, and would arrive in New York as an overwhelming favorite in the final leg of racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes. Facing a stellar field that included Derby winner Monarcos and talented rivals AP Valentine, Invisible Ink, and Dollar Bill, Point Given would leave little doubt about the best three-year-old in the country.
Here is a powerful, compelling performance by Point Given. He is under the line to win the Belmont by 11 lengths at the finish. Sensational effort here. AP Valentine finished second, and Monarcos was third.
His dominating 12.5-length victory was among the largest in the 133-year history of the race. He had left his Hall of Fame jockey, Gary Stevens, in awe and left racing fans to wonder what might have been. The 2001 renewal of the Test of the Champion provided yet another memorable moment in Belmont Stakes history.
Hey,
edging closer to the 147th test of the champion here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Welcome back to Belmont Park. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom are with you tomorrow morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern as well, so make sure you join us right here for the Triple Crown Countdown. Of course, this show going to be replayed from noon to 2 on SiriusXM Satellite Radio following Steve Bick's program. That will be at noon Eastern time, noon to 2 on Sirius 220 XM channel 206. And, of course, you can always check out a podcast of this program on our website, horseracingradio.net, and all of our programs, including our trainer talk show from last night where I sat down with trainer Billy Turner and talked to him about going through the Triple Crown with 1977 winner Seattle Slew. And Billy joined me for the full hour. It was an amazing visit with him. You can go back and check that out, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. A little chilly out here this morning. Temperature's only in the 50s. Of course, going to be
yesterday.
Yeah, a bit better for Saturday, though. Just looked at the forecast for Saturday afternoon. Earlier in the week, they were calling for showers. Those are now gone. The forecast calling for mostly sunny skies. Temperature's 79 degrees for that Belmont space.
Good, because my toes have yet to thaw out from this Triple Crown series that we've been on.
Oh, give me a break. That's all he does is whine.
I'll tell you. You were undercover in the Preakness, you guys.
How did you handle riding in Northwest Canada? How did that work out for
it's
you?
It's called summer. Summertime.
Just saw Angel Cordero over here a minute ago.
He wore a mask like Jorge Soler.
That's one of the greatest stories. We heard that last night, right?
Hey, you brought it up. I did.
I love that story. Cordero came up to Northern Canada where Jeff was riding. He was there for an exhibition day, and it was his day. He was supposed to show off, so he was on all these short-priced horses. And here comes Bloom. He jumped up and beat him. He wasn't supposed to beat him.
It was good. That was good. It's a competition.
What do you mean, wasn't supposed to beat
him? Well, it's supposed to be Cordero's day, right? Oh, He's supposed to be the guy.
I beat him one time. He beat me 6,000 others.
And so it was really Jeff Bloom Day.
How about Cordero? How good is that guy? I mean, you talk about somebody who was just unbelievable. And now here he is, the agent for Hall of Famer John Velasquez and mentoring so many of the young riders today. Really a great ambassador for the sport.
I'll tell you what, he rode for me once. I had enough. He cost me a $1 million race at Hollywood Park. I told him, do not move on this horse until you get to the 16th pole. And it was a $1 million purse in the days when we didn't have those, the Hollywood Futurity. And he opened up at the 8th pole by like 4 lengths and got nailed on the wire. And I was not a happy fellow.
I think you should have stuck with the girl riders because you had terrible luck with all
you
these
know,
Hall of Famers.
Shoemaker told me that one time. Because I
remember rode McCarron and came back one time and wasn't too happy after a ride that he put on one of your horses.
Oh, well, I kind of took advantage of Chris that day. I had two in the same maiden race. These are the things you have to do when you don't have a lot of horses. I had two in the same maiden race at Santa Anita. It was the last race of the day. And the horse that I put Chris on wasn't that great, but ended up going off like 5-2. And I put Joe Steiner on the one that could run because I wanted to bet on her. And she ran third, and Chris came back, and he knew that he had gotten the job. And I said to him, oh, what are you thinking? He goes, I'm not going to call my dad and tell him what a nice filly I rode for Jude Feld this afternoon. Oh, boy. Those are some fun times.
All part of the lore, the
good
legend,
times,
the mystique
noodle salad.
Frosted came by just a few moments ago. Sean, what'd you think of him?
He looks fine. He's galloping fine. He doesn't probably wow you as much as American Pharoah when you see him, but he trains fine. I mean, it's a routine gallop. It was nothing but just an exercise. Looks bright, ears up. I like that.
Yeah, getting over the surface very well, and a lot of people thinking maybe Frosted is the one to pull off the upset. Of course, Frosted, Materiality, Mutahij, all coming back after skipping the Preakness Stakes. Keen Ice is another one for trainer Dale Romans. We'll try to catch up with him, if not later this morning, then tomorrow morning for sure. Hall of Famer Nick Zito, going to try and get him up here tomorrow too. Here's a guy that has pulled off 2 Belmont victories, both of those coming in years when there was a Triple Crown on the line. So, he sends out Long Shot Fermento. Boy, can you overlook Nick Zito in the Belmont Stakes? You maybe throw him out at your own peril, but Fermento certainly doesn't look to be on par with some of the other runners in here.
I just wonder what all that has a bearing on the results this year. The fact that Nick Zito spoiled two Triple Crowns, does that really have a bearing on anything?
No.
Or is it on a race-to-race basis?
No, I don't think it does. Do you?
I don't know. You know, sports bettors, they go on trends and this and
right.
that. You, but I don't know. It's an interesting question.
It's you know, it's like that question that always comes up for post position draw at the Kentucky Derby. Well, this post has never won the Kentucky Derby or
17.
One horse. Yeah, but if you look at the last 40 years of horses that were in that post position, you know, well, should that horse have won the Kentucky Derby anyways? And you know, I think at the end of the day, the best horse, you know, typically wins the race the way they're supposed to, you know, barring any bizarre mishaps. And there is something to be said, though, about a guy like Nick Zito, who knows how to get horses ready on big race days, you know, and you know, he's, you know, certainly been pointing this horse to the Triple Crown.
I will say that the fact that the race is a mile and a half, and some guys have a knack for that. Some guys have a knack for training horses that can go a long ways. And that could be the proper trend, but the fact that he actually has done it twice, I don't know if it necessarily makes a difference. But you know, Nick Zito is always dangerous. You know, I mean, he's one of those guys that he will pop up with a horse sometimes that people don't expect to run well.
How about the two pickup mounts for the jockeys on those long shots? Looking at Fermento, he'll be ridden for the first time by Hall of Famer Mike Smith, a two-time Belmont winner. Tough to do any better than that, unless you're going to be Tale of Verve, who was runner-up in the Preakness Stakes under Joel Rosario. Joel ends up sticking with Frosted, so who does Dallas Stewart go to? Well, he gets the Hall of Famer Gary Stevens, who's a three-time Belmont winner. So
yeah.
How about that?
Well, you know, I mean, those guys are probably going to be here anyway. But the greatest jockey agents that I know are very reticent to pick up horses in races that don't have a good chance, because you never know what's going to happen in racing. And a jock can always take off of his mounts or something unforeseen happen, and a good horse opens up. So you don't want to be saddled with a horse that maybe has a marginal chance. Now, granted, those horses are not, you know, crazy outside chance horses. I mean, certainly Tale of Verve, you know, coming off that big race, he could be an interesting horse, as Jeff brought up earlier. And you know, I mean, it's a hard question. Do you want to sit it out and the horse maybe you could have ridden win and then you feel like an idiot, or do you want to, you know, just wait and see what happens? But I think sometimes patience is a virtue.
Yeah, certainly. Again, the weather's supposed to be pretty nice here on Saturday. They capped the attendance this year at 90,000. Now, a lot of people not happy with that decision because of the fact that they're not going to sell tickets on Belmont Day itself. So people that are so accustomed to coming out to the racetrack, as they've done for years, and paying a general admission ticket to get in, are not going to be able to do that. You have to get your ticket in advance by going to NYRA.com or BelmontStakes.com to do that. But do you like the decision, guys, to cap the attendance and not let it run up to 105, 110, 120, wherever it might end up?
Well, I think anybody that likes to pee would appreciate the fact that they're capping it. Because usually the bathrooms, I mean, if this is part of your daily routine, and I know that some people that doesn't, it's not, but, you know, the bathroom situation here gets crazy. The concession thing gets crazy. So if people can come to the track and have a good experience, and it's not like they're not shutting anybody out, but you got to go online, buy your ticket. And the other thing you have to remember is Belmont's very security conscious. After 9/11, they've changed a lot of things around here. They're very security conscious here in New York as a rule. And so all in all, I mean, I think it's a really good idea.
My take on that is, okay, the cutoff, 80,000, 90,000. Facilities like this, even though this is a huge, sprawled out facility, once you get past 25, 30,000, it's kind of all the same in a way. Like, is there really a big difference between 90,000 and 105,000? Is that extra 15,000 really going to sort of break the bank or, you know, sort of crush the thing? And, you know, I understand why they're doing it. And there were some issues last year, as we all know. I mean, just people being able to leave the place and get out of here.
Well, I think that's the big reason behind the cap. And I had a conversation with Darren Miner, who is the new marketing director here, and And I told him that I wasn't thrilled with the decision. I said I didn't agree with what you guys were doing because I don't feel as if we can turn anybody away that wants to come out and experience this sport. But he looked at it the other way, and his point was valid as well. He said, you know, we have to be able to give them a good experience when they come out here, and we can't be running out of hot dogs and running out of hot dog buns. And, of course, then I come back with the flip side of that and say, okay, prepare for success, as Jude always likes to say.
Sure.
You find a way to work with the transportation authorities here in New York to organize enough trains coming out to Belmont Park so that you can alleviate some of that. Now, if you're coming to an event like the Belmont, or even when you go to Saratoga for the Travers, or if you're at the Derby, you have to expect that this is going to be an event, and you're going to have to wait for some things. You know that everything's not going to go 100% smoothly, but there's no excuse for running out of hot dogs or running out of a beer.
Or programs.
Yeah, there's absolutely no excuse for any of that, and that falls squarely on the racetrack.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, this is a time when we talk frequently. This comes up in conversation. How do we get more people out to the racetrack? How do we get more people engaged? And so if you have an opportunity to bring more people out to experience this great game of horse racing, why not take advantage of it? Look, there's pros and cons, but at the end of the day, I still come back to, I think if you're upwards of 60, 70,000 people, you've already crossed that barrier, so to speak. You know, you're going to have the issue of long concession lines and the bathroom issues and the transportation issues. So to your point, figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. We're going to step away for one last break. We will come back and continue our Triple Crown Countdown show, and we'll tell you what's ahead for the rest of the week. It's all right here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's run history in the Belmont Stakes.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment presented by Cal Density. A C of A, commonly known as an analytical report of results from chemical and microbiological analysis of a lot number associated with a product purchased. This analysis is performed by an independent laboratory, ensuring an unbiased analysis of the quantity and quality of the supplement and made available upon request from the manufacturer. The microbiological profile should include salmonella, E. coli, total coliforms, yeast, and mold, not only to protect the horse, but the handlers as well. Not all manufacturers offer these findings. Does yours? It's all part of keeping your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Cal Density. Ingredients in Cal Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit caldensity.com. Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, this Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thank you.
closer to post time for the 147th Belmont Stakes, the test of the champion in American Pharoah's Run It history, which we'll have for you exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. You can tune in Saturday afternoon beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern Time for coverage of the undercard here at Belmont. And then, of course, the Belmont Stakes coming up right around 6:50 Eastern Time. We'll take you all the way through. We're with you on Saturday afternoon until 7:30 Eastern Time. And you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete broadcast schedule, listing of affiliates, and all that SiriusXM channel information. It's all there at horseracingradio.net, as is a podcast of this show available for you shortly after we finish up here in about 15 minutes. You can go there and download today's Triple Crown Countdown show and yesterday's as well and listen to them at your leisure. And don't forget about that trainer talk presented by Fasig Tipton with Billy Turner yesterday afternoon, the trainer of Seattle Slough. It was an amazing hour, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So go check it out at horseracingradio.net. Go to caldensity.com right now and enter promo code HRRN for your free shipping. You just heard that segment in the commercial break, keeping your horse healthy. Well, Cal Density is the way to do it. It's a phenomenal product. You can go there and check it out now at caldensity.com. And again, if you're ordering when you're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown show, you'll get that free shipping by entering promo code HRRN. 2 days, 9 hours, 5 minutes left to go.
They finally got it right.
Where was that? Last weekend,
Last weekend. They said it was 4 days away, a Saturday out from the Belmont.
Yeah. We were at Penn National, and Jude looked at me like I had six heads. He said, it can't be 4 days. It's only Saturday.
The Belmont clock was off.
Yes.
Well, it's one way to make sure you have a smaller crowd on hand.
Well, yeah. I got to say.
More people here Thursday. It makes sense.
I got to say, Longines, as they say in Europe, is a sponsor of many racetracks and many racing functions. But there is a beautiful watch replica clock here near the finish line, and it's great when you're on the radio to be able to see what time it is when the brakes may fall. And because I don't wear a watch often, but I use my phone for timekeeping, but it's great to see that up there, and it's really beautiful.
You know what's amazing is that we have spent almost 4 hours on air with the Triple Crown Countdown, 2 hours yesterday and nearly 2 hours here today, and the trainer that we haven't talked about yet is trainer Todd Pletcher, which is beyond me how we could be talking about the Belmont Stakes and not talking about Todd Pletcher.
You're the host.
We're just following your lead, buddy. Talk about Bugs Bunny. We'll tell you how great Bugs Bunny is. Whatever you're talking about, we'll respond.
Overshadowed by his counterpart, Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, but Todd Pletcher, saddling his 19th and 20th Belmont starters. He's won the race twice. He did it in 2007 with Rags to Riches, defeating Curlin, and then in 2013 with Palace Malice. He's also finished second on four different occasions, including last year with Commissioner, and the fourth time that he saddled multiple starters in the Belmont Stakes. So Todd Pletcher, no stranger to this race, and no stranger to having success in this race. He sends out Made from Lucky and Materiality. We've talked about Materiality, the Florida Derby winner who suffered his first defeat in the Kentucky Derby. How about Made from Lucky, a winner of the Peter Pan Stakes here a few weeks back, the local prep, so to speak, for the Belmont?
Well, Made from Lucky was impressive winning the Peter Pan. I thought he ran a really, really good race that day. The thing that concerns me about him is when I watched the breeze that he had with Carpe Diem. Carpe Diem out-breezed him pretty good. And the rider on Made from Lucky actually used a stick on him a little bit to keep him interested. And that really didn't sit well with me coming into the Belmont. I don't know how the horse usually trains. Maybe he's a lazy type horse in the mornings. But it didn't give me a lot of confidence that he was at the top of his game watching that video.
Materiality, to me, is a very intriguing horse in the race, as you know. Leading up to the Kentucky Derby, I was a big fan of Materiality, lightly raced, but really had all the makings of a horse that you thought's going to move in the right direction and did not have the best of trips in the Kentucky Derby, and looks like a horse that has all kinds of improve. How much improve? still remains to be seen. And of course, you know, there's always the mile and a half distance. Whether a horse has the pedigree for a mile and a half, it's still a weird distance regardless. But certainly a horse that looks the part. And, you know, I don't think Todd Pletcher would have brought him back in the Belmont Stakes if he didn't think he had a right to win it.
Materiality, a son of 2005 Belmont winner of Fleet Alex. Remember, he was sixth in the Derby and then skipped the Preakness to be here in the Belmont. And if you're wondering about how Belmont winners have done when they've had runners in the Belmont, well, four Belmont winners have sired a Belmont Stakes victor. Most recently, Seattle Slough, who did it twice. He sired Swale, who won the 1984 running, and AP Indy, who took the race in 1992.
Oh, he's live materiality for sure. I mean, he's by Fleet Alex, Langfear mare. His Derby, if you look at it, he didn't have anything go right. He was sixth, beaten less than eight lengths. Todd Pletcher decided then, wait for the Belmont, give him 5 weeks. And, you know, I think when you're talking about a horse that's somewhat lightly raced, I think the 5 weeks comes into more play with him. I mean, it's more beneficial for him because he hadn't had that many races. So now he had a hard race. His first real hard race was in the Derby. He's had 5 weeks to recover. So he's a live horse for sure.
Jake Ballas walking by, a big-time owner, has horses all over the country. Much like Bloom Racing, I guess, right, Jeff?
Sort of.
Congratulations, well, by the way.
Thank you.
We haven't had you on the air with us yet to congratulate you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Majestic City taking the Lone Star Handicap.
Chucky Lopez.
Yeah, CeCe. And you told me last night he's moving his tack to Golden Gate for a while now.
He is. He's decided to relocate to the West Coast and see if he can try his trade there in the Northern California Golden Gate fields and ride with his sons. He's actually riding one for me tomorrow.
Who's the horse?
Ghost of Navigator.
Are we live? Are we trying? Is the barn trying?
Is it a go?
I will. as we like to say, we're always trying. And we're trying hard.
How would you like to ride a race against your dad? Then that would be wild, right? Can you imagine? Like, Dad, give me a look. Dad, come on, Dad.
They're coming out of the turn, and you need some help. You know, you got nowhere to go. And, hey, Pops, it's me right behind you. And he turns around and says, sorry, kid.
I'm not giving up the rail.
CeCe, by the way, if people go to our website, they can go hear an entire Jock Talk show with CeCe because he joined me 2 weeks ago on the program right after that victory. And he talked about that aspect of it because not only is he riding against his two sons at Golden Gate, but CeCe also rode against his father. And he goes back and walks you through that particular race. I believe he told me there were four different Lopez's in that race, all related. Wow. How amazing is that?
So definitely doesn't work to say, Lopez, give me a look. Definitely does not work.
He said, Dad won that race. Wow. And I told him, I said, come on, you let him win. And he says, oh, no. He said, we wanted to beat the master. That was our goal. Wow. So I'm sure his two sons are thinking that same thing when they get into the gate with him at Golden Gate.
Yeah, they got to be. And I'll tell you, it was great. I mean, outside of the favorite in the race that they all ran in against each other, who just went out on the lead and won easily, the three of them were sort of battling it off, and he and his the older son were head and head for a good part of down the stretch. And I sent Chucky a text right after the race. I said, well, that was really nice of you to let the son win, you know, and get the head bob. But he said he was on his belly doing what he could to get the nose, and they finished second, third, and fourth. It was kind of pretty, it was really cool, actually.
Well, you know, we were talking about materiality just a moment ago, and he's going to be ridden by John Velasquez, Hall of Famer. Sean, you caught up with John Preakness Day. It was on our undercard coverage. John did not have him out, somehow didn't have him out in the Preakness, but he walked through what Victor's strategy should be with American Pharoah from the inside post. And he said, if it's me, I blast right off and try to get good position there and get myself onto the lead, because otherwise you risk getting shuffled back, getting dirt kicked in his face for the first time, and you don't want to experiment with that in the Preakness. And I thought that was great. He's such a student of the game as John Velasquez. Well, when he studies this race, he's going to find himself and materiality in the outside post position number 8. Mile and a half, lots of time to get into position in here. What might the strategy be from this outside position with a horse like American Pharoah in post 5?
Well, the key to what John Velasquez's success is his definitiveness. I've said it all the time. He's so definitive. Even when he'll make mistakes, but it was a definitive mistake. I mean, he'll go and make a move. Where guys get in trouble is when they don't make a decision. They just kind of let something happen around them. So Johnny will be definitive with this horse. I mean, I think breaking from the outside, you want to feather over. The key to moving over is what's around you. So Keen Ice is, you know, he'll kind of come from out of it. He's directly inside him, so you'll cross over him. Frosted, you probably want to be in front of him, and then that gets you right to American Pharoah. I think Johnny will put Materiality right with American Pharoah as close to him as he can be.
Does American Pharoah go to the front?
Well, I think he breaks sharply. I think you break sharply, and you see what's happening around you. I mean, you definitely don't want to take back, and you definitely don't want to send like he did in the Preakness. I mean, he kind of hustled him out of there in the Preakness because of the wet track and inside post. He doesn't necessarily have to do that here. The horse has good tactical speed. I'd be fine if he was in front. I mean, if I was Victor, I wouldn't be opposed to being in front. I don't think you want to go out there and say, I definitely want to be in front. But you're playing, you know, your options are, okay, if I'm in front, this is what I want to do. If I'm sitting second or third, who's going to be around me? And, you know, everybody's kind of watching him and responding to him.
To your question, Mike, I don't think Victor knows where he's going to be exactly, you know, and you talk about the trainer and the jockey getting together and talking strategy, and it's just like in the Preakness, you know, Victor sort of, it was, hey, you know what, it started raining really hard, the track got wet, I thought, you know, I'm going to go to the front. The beauty of American Pharoah is he is so versatile, and I think that the horse has so much underlying talent and so much speed for a horse that can appear to run all day that Victor can make a decision as they break open. That as that gate breaks open, he kind of, you know, he's going to see how things are playing out, who's going to be hustling, and does he need to have the lead? No, he doesn't have to have the lead, but he's such a fast horse that I'd be shocked to not see him right up in it.
Yeah, and I think the great thing about American Pharoah is he doesn't get strong. You know, I think if he is close and somebody runs up behind him, or he's got a, you know, he's not a type horse like Funny Side was just pulling too much. Smarty Jones was pulling too much, and so far you've never seen American Pharoah really pull. So you know, you'd have the ability as a jockey, you have the ability to, you can smooch a little and get a position and then sit where, you know, like the Preakness, he hustled him out of there, but the horse never really got rank. I mean, he just galloping along in the lead comfortable. So as a rider, that's what you want. You want to be able to make moves without affecting your horse's tempo, without him, you know, you don't want him to get on the bridle and do too much. And that's the great thing about American Pharoah.
Could you see a scenario where Johnny V would just go balls to the wall, leaving there and make the lead and just say, you're going to have to run me down?
I think he could, yeah. I mean, I don't think he will, but you know, if nobody goes, I think he will. I mean, I know Johnny. If that's his definitive moves. I mean, if they break and nobody goes, if Victor starts taking back on American Pharoah and nobody's going, I can see Johnny going. And Johnny's good. He'll know. You know, he'll know the pace. You know how it's setting up. Where, you know, I'd take Johnny Velasquez over anybody because he makes definitive moves and he comes back. And I've seen him do it. He said it to me. He's ridden a few horses for me. He comes back and he'll say, I screwed up. I shouldn't have done that. I thought there wasn't any pace. I went. And, you know, when you go to interview him, he tells you exactly what he did, why he did it, and whether it worked or not, he takes credit or discredit. I mean, he absolutely he makes moves. I mean, he makes decisions. And that's you've seen him win races time after time by making decisions.
One thing I want to talk with you guys about tomorrow is the fact that this is a very difficult thing to accomplish, the Triple Crown. We haven't seen it in 37 years, but where does it rank with other sports and other sporting accomplishments? For example, the Triple Crown in Major League Baseball, right? That hasn't been done. Well, it was just done, what, Miguel Cabrera? He just did it a few years back.
Two or three years.
But you had to go back to Yastrzemski before that, right? Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, and then, you know, then you have the Grand Slam in golf, right? That accomplishing all four majors in the same season, which has never been done. That could be one. There's a lot of different
things.
He pulled it off, but not in the same year.
Yeah.
Right? So we'll look at that tomorrow. We'll kind of take some other sports and what their major accomplishment is, and where does where does the Triple Crown rank in terms of those other sports? I think it would be kind of an interesting discussion tomorrow. Also expecting to be joined by Dale Romans tomorrow. Steve Haskin from the Blood Horse is going to stop by. We're going to be joined by the folks from West Point Thoroughbreds as well to talk to them about Twilight Eclipse, who's on the undercard Saturday, and also talk about the Triple Crown with them, kind of get their thoughts on. Maybe we'll ask them that very same question. What is it that is so difficult about accomplishing the Triple Crown in horse racing? Elliot Walden today spelled it out beautifully, I thought, and then people can go back and listen to that interview on our website with the podcast of this show at horseracingradio.net. So going to be a busy show. We are back tomorrow, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, right here live on the Triple Crown Countdown. The show will be replayed again from noon to 2 on Sirius 220 XM. Channel 206. You can always listen to the podcast on our website and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And don't forget, you can stream all of our programming every time we're on the air on our website, on your smartphone, or on your tablet by going to horseracingradio.net. Tonight, the BrisNet.com call-in show comes your way. Ed DeRosa, Anthony Stabile hosting the show every Thursday night, but it should be a good one tonight with the Triple Crown on the line. You can tune in on Sirius 220 XM 206 and on our website as well. And then, of course, looking ahead to tomorrow, this show live from 8 to 10, and then Saturday, a huge day. Our Equine Forum show comes your way at 8 a.m., and then all of our exclusive race coverage, including the 147th Belmont, beginning 2 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday. See a complete schedule at horseracingradio.net.
I want everybody to know that the Baron did that right out of his head. No script, no notes, no anything. Very impressive. I'm going, this guy's on a roll.
He's a pro.
I kind of know the schedule.
I guess you do.
For a while.
You're like Kieran McLaughlin, knowing the dates and drivers and every other stakes out there.
I never even go to the website. I just send you a text and go, what time are we doing this?
Yeah, how about checking the schedule?
You're like Kieran McLaughlin with the dates, yeah.
All right, Ben Fine. For our producer, Lee Delapina, back in Lexington, Kentucky, Sean C., our producer here. For Sean Clancy, Jeff Bloom, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna.
Good night, Barbados.